Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's time for part two of our Marvel Universe deep dive as Rove returns to help me dig into the new Black Widow movie. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I'm done running from the past here on Big Squid. Second part of our Marvel deep dive this week. I thought it was only going to be a two-parter, but then I remembered, oh, it's Loki episode 5 later in the week, so this might be one of those trilogies that wasn't planned, and then you listen to it and think, it wasn't at all. But anyway, Rove and I have already covered episode 5 of Loki that came out on Saturday. Today is all about the Black Widow. This is a movie I've been waiting for them to make for a very long time. I'm a Scarlett Johansson fan, and I like Black Widow. I don't think they did a lot with the character to begin with, but I think she kind of developed her over time, mainly through Johansson's performance, to be honest. And I was rapt that they finally made this, and then it was meant to come out last year, and COVID put it back, etc., blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I don't want to preempt anything in my chat with Rove, but there is a little part of me that thinks, did this come along a bit late? But anyway, Scarlett's great. I'm a fan of Florence Pugh. I'm also a fan of Rachel Weisz. So I was pretty up for this film, which I did enjoy. But anyway, if you haven't heard the Loki episode, you don't need to listen to it. But I did say on that episode I was going to tie a theory I had in to the end of this podcast. I've got some crazy thoughts, and I threw them out there to Rove, and then when I stopped recording this podcast, I saw another site straight after the recording. I had not seen anything, and I saw another site suggesting the same thing. So I'm feeling like I'm tapping into something that Marvel is laying out. I think I'm excited by that. I think. Is it that clever if I've thought it out? No, it means that they're doing it the right way. Anyway, whatever. I could be wrong. Now, before we get into it, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't want to spoil it for you. So if that's the case, I'd suggest sitting this podcast out until you have caught up with the film. If you don't care about spoilers, then you'll be fine. Otherwise, abandon all hope ye enter, as there are spoilers ahead. Okay, I've made that clear, haven't I? I don't want to ruin it for you. I don't want you to accidentally listen to this. Right, now it is time to talk Black Widow.
I tell people my sister moved out west.
You're a science teacher.
Your husband, he renovates houses.
You're thinking about moving, but you're gonna wait until the interest rates go down.
That's not my story. Before I was an Avenger, I made mistakes. And a lot of enemies.
He's called Science Taskmaster. He controls the Red Room. They're manipulated. Fully conscious, but no choices.
I should have come back for you.
How many others are there? Enough.
We have to go back to where it all started. So they never do that to anyone again.
We're a family. We fight with you.
You won't win.
I've always found it best
not to look into the past.
Okay, you got a plan, or shall I just stay duck and cover?
But my plan was to drive us away.
Well, your plan sucks.
At some point, we all have to choose between what the world wants you to be and who you are. I made my choice. I'm done running. Here's what's gonna happen.
Natasha, don't slouch.
I'm not slouching.
You're going to get a back hunch.
Listen to your mother.
Oh my God, this...
Up.
Listen. All right, enough. All of you.
I didn't say anything. That's not fair.
So we finally have a Black Widow movie, and it's great to have Scarlett Johansson back in the role. And while I was watching this, and I have some thoughts that are all over the place with this one, but the first thing I want to ask you is, was it a mistake killing her off in Avengers Endgame? Like, was that Scarlett Johansson's decision to move on? Because I just feel like I was fine with Cap and Iron Man being done, but I feel like there's still so much meat on the bone for Black Widow.
Yeah, I feel for all of these, it comes down to, Scarlett Johansson, Robert Downey Jr. quite clearly are two of the biggest names in there, where they don't need the films. Scarlett Johansson especially, she could have a ton of other roles, whether it's in other big blockbuster-type films or some of the more, you know, close to those sort of indie flicks that she's critically acclaimed for in the past. So the idea of her being tied to something like this, and I don't mean that in too much of a negative sense because I'm sure she loves it, but you can't do it forever. And that they come around a lot, and it was starting to become, even if it's a Captain America film, we're probably going to need you. And while I'm sure your 10th mansion with a multi-story swimming pool paycheck that comes with turning up in each one is a happy thing to take every time, I think as an actor, there would be a contract that would be ready to expire. They would come to you to say, would you like to do more? And you would say, you know what, I'm good. I'm good, and I'm very happy to move on to other things because also hashtag royalties. So, yeah, I think it was probably her call. But, yeah, man, I'm glad she – I'll say this. I'm glad that we got this send-off, though, this other little self-contained send-off rather than just jumping off a cliff. Right. In Infinity War in Endgame. This was the send-off that was needed, I think, for her character.
Yeah. Well,
look, you seem so disappointed.
I didn't like watching it at home for the first time. I reckon it knocks 10% off your enjoyment because I'm just easily distracted at home. Like, whereas in the cinema, like I'm locked in, I'm loaded. Yeah, but at home, I'm like, I feel like a snack. I might go and get a glass of water. Might go and take a shit.
My dog was suddenly going, oh, you're home. You're not normally home. You're normally out doing things. Well, why don't you just sit here and rub my belly? And I really need to watch this. She said, well, you could still watch and rub my belly. I'm like, okay, I can do both. All right.
Yes,
all right.
Yes,
and then I start getting into the film and she's like, you're not rubbing as hard as you were before. Come on.
Okay. Yep.
But yeah, this one, this would have been wonderful to see on the big screen. And I know there's parts of the country and parts of the world where you still can. Unlike you, I didn't. But I also feel like it, because this was one that was meant to be out like last year or something.
I'm
also questioning why it seemed like they sat on this for so long, because I'll put it out there early. I thought it was really good and I really, really enjoyed it. And I was invested the whole way. So it sort of feels like it was one of those ones that I guess maybe they were just hoping for things to open up in the world post-pandemic sooner than they were. And they were like, this is going to be another one of those ones that we get an absolute truckload of cash for from ticket sales, and could well be the one that returns people to cinemas. So we'll just wait on this and keep our powder dry. But, yeah, look, you know, in short, I'd say it was worth the wait.
I think the reason the movie's coming out now is because, and we'll get to it later, but there's things in this film that mean you can't have some of the TV series come out unless you get this movie out now. So I reckon they would have held off even longer if they could have, but then it mucks up their TV schedule. But look, I've got some positives to say, but for me, there's just something about the film that I was enjoying, but it kind of left me a little bit cold, and it was a few things. So one is, this just should have come out after Captain America Civil War. Like, if you bring it out, if you make this movie after Captain America Civil War, then maybe Yelena is one of the people who disappears with the snap, which then gives Natasha's sacrifice a little bit more guts in Endgame.
Yes.
And the movie kind of lacks stakes for me because I knew, well, Natasha's not going to die at the end of it. I know that she's got a sense of family because I've already seen that develop through Avengers Infinity War and all of that kind of stuff. And there's nothing bad's going to happen to Florence Pugh because she's quite clearly going to be the next Black Widow, and you're not going to kill her off. So while I was watching it, and I'm not saying I wasn't enjoying it, I just never at any point felt any level of, oh, no.
Yeah, and I think the royal we, I think in the Marvel Universe, because I probably was watching it, you know, having obviously gone through things like WandaVision and Loki as well, this idea that you're kind of jumping back and forth throughout the MCU timeline. And while some of the films have done that in the past, they're not necessarily all in chronological order, but they kind of follow a rough timeline that to do a big jump like this at the moment didn't feel so abrupt, because I was like, well, yeah, we've been trying to work out, well, where is the character of Loki compared to where he was in the films between the, you know, this Avengers film and that Avengers film. So the idea of this kind of sitting somewhere in the past post Civil War, my brain could handle that. But yeah, I don't want to sit there thinking, well, yeah, now we're going to start just making films and slotting them wherever we can into these tiny gaps within the MCU timeline. That sort of feels like a line that if you cross it, is going to start making things a bit too mucky. I don't mind it as a bit of a novelty. I'm not usually a big fan of prequels, to be honest, for all the reasons you have said. It's like, okay, so we might see where Darth Vader ends up. But, yeah, I know this character's not going to die and that character's not going to die. And how can none of you tell that is Emperor Palpatine, for crying out loud? You know, it's not a big reveal. I can tell it's the same guy, everybody.
Yeah.
So, same sort of thing. It was just like, I know where this ends. So it does kind of leave that a bit deflated. But I still felt like it was satisfying. But, yeah, my concern would be, or just my hope would be, don't make a habit of this.
Well, you know, it's
let's move things forward. You know, let's not keep going back and trying to squeeze into what was a very successful period and epoch in Marvel Cinematic history, because you might start Star Wars, you might start eroding that that love for that timeline and that franchise a little bit if you don't just let that go and move on and try to just come up with something new and original.
And for me, you know how there's some people who say the best way to watch the Star Wars films now for kids who haven't seen it is Show a New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, go backwards, you know, watch
yeah,
the prequels,
so it's like you
then
do,
jump forward.
You do, yeah, you go New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, so you get the Vader reveal, and then you go back and you do the original Phantom Menace and beyond to get his origin story, and then you jump into Return of the Jedi and keep going. And you're like, no, it shouldn't be that way. It should be, you know, you watch the trilogy and enjoy the trilogy. So I don't quite get into all that sort of stuff too much. And it is, like I say, it's a slippery slope. You gotta be careful a little bit.
But you can't watch the prequels first, because then the Empire Strikes Back reveal is, you know, nothing.
Yeah, pointless.
And
exactly.
And then with this, I reckon if I had, you know, if I was showing kids for the first time, I would show this after Civil War and I would just skip the after credit scene.
Ah, yes. Although, I feel still, like it would be, you know, fun. The reveal of, okay, so at some point her character dies and how, we don't know, is...
But I reckon in the Avengers Endgame scene, you actually think it's going to be Hawkeye, because we've all made Hawkeye jokes for so long.
Yeah, I suppose.
So it was actually a shock.
Yeah, and then any opportunity that there is for... And there's probably not that many where you would think... I'm trying to think where the Black Widow character is in real mortal peril. It's probably not that many if you go back and think about it. So that would be the one you go, oh, especially when, you know, it's a long drawn out scene of, okay, two enter but only one will leave. Very quickly you go, oh, okay, this is when it happens. This is when it happens. Yeah. So, yeah, that's fair enough.
I've always said for years that, you know, I've wanted a Black Widow movie for ages because I think Johansson's really good, and I always wanted it to kind of be in the style of a Bourne movie, and so I really loved the start of it, which felt like an amalgamation of the Americans, then straight into a Bourne film.
It's exactly where I was headed. I don't know if we've mentioned it before, but, if you have Binge or Foxtel, the TV series, the FX TV series, the Americans... based on the very real story of in the 80s, there were Russian spies, these people who had been raised as if they were Westerners, Americans, on American culture and speaking the language, who then infiltrated. There was a woman who was caught, and it turned out to be just the tip of the iceberg. And there's a great television series based on this idea of Russian spies living as Americans that this reminded me of very much so. And that was a great start to all that iconography, singing American Pie, driving past a baseball game on what appeared to be the 4th of July, because you can see there's all this, like the American flag up in lights on this bridge and stuff like that, as they say farewell. I thought was a really great start to the film for sure.
Yeah, I was totally into that. And then getting into the sort of Bourne feel of it, you know, like the phone call with William Hurt's general and, you know, her being far away from where they think she's going to be. I thought all of that was fantastic.
I felt that was coming. It was the old, you know, that old Bourne identity misdirect. Same thing as Silence of the Lambs, the character, you know, the SWAT team is about to storm and banging on the door, and it turns out, yeah, and the reveal of the villainous character, it's actually, you know, the Jodie Foster character knocking on his door, that sort of thing. Yeah. I did feel that was coming. She's in the bathroom, and at no point does Ross turn around and go, have you put me on speakerphone? Sounds like I'm on speakerphone. Yet in his ear, she's still very intimately talking like this. It's like, no, you're in an echoey toilet. Don't put me on speakerphone. What are you doing? You're working on something, are you? Oh, have you just been to the toilet? Yeah. Or at least you're washing your hands.
Yeah, thank goodness. Like, that's why they're trying to catch it, because she's disgusting. Yeah. But the...
She's a super spreader.
I really love the scene where, you know, where Natasha and Yelena are also fighting. And I just, once again, why do we have these CGI endings? Why can't it be, you have these two actors that are very good at, you know, doing the physical action. We had all of those Black Widows in training. We had Taskmaster, who can do all of this stuff. Now, I know it's a superhero film, so then everything's a little bit heightened, but just a CGI ending is just a bummer to me these days. That's just kind of...
Yeah. Look, I was going to bring it up if people haven't listened to our Loki podcast. It was something I was going to mention in the last one. The previous episode of Loki, and whether you've seen it or not, it's not really super important at this point. Or listen to the podcast is not important. But one of the things that kind of was slightly taking me out of that episode too was it was a very CGI heavy episode, quite clearly not done on a very modern Mandalorian style what do they call it? Not the volume, where it's like the backdrop is projected on this enormous screen that moves with the characters and makes it feel immersive. The Loki one was quite clearly done on green screen with a very healthy Disney Marvel budget, but still a Marvel Disney TV budget. And a lot of that just felt like the characters were walking around in front of a green screen. For me, for a full episode, there were just too many moments where I was taken out of it. And there was a few of those moments with this too, especially the breakout with the helicopter and the avalanche, and when they were getting Alexei out of the prison. It was great. It was exciting and thrilling and dumb fun, but it's still, there was a bit of that I felt too was just, you know, to use a comedy term, it's a hat on a hat. It was just like, okay, I get it. Can we just, you don't need to do the last final swing around with the helicopter and swing in and grab him off the railing. Just, you can get him out just in time for the avalanche to come through. But even that felt a bit over the top. But like you say, just, you know, that bit at the end too felt like it does take you out of the emotion of the scene a little bit when they do that sometimes.
Yeah. And I think she's a really great actor, and I really enjoy watching her do stuff, and it just all felt there's so much debris, and you're sitting there thinking, how are the parachutes not being ripped apart the moment that they're opened? And it's the things that you have to get right.
I like that it was right at the end, you know, once the family have kind of had their reckoning and reconciliation, and it's like, what are you going to do? Well, what are you going to do? Well, maybe we should all kind of do it together, but not for now, because I kind of have to go and get back together with my Avengers mates. And then you see like I'm guessing with the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents on their way finally in their cars. You're like, you didn't see this giant thing falling out of the sky 2 hours ago? Like you've just arrived on the scene. It's not a car accident. This thing is huge, and it was exploding. And it's the idea that they just happened to rock up right as everything is settled was one of those things that that made me chuckle. But overall, on all of that sort of stuff, I want to give a massive shout out to Kate Shortland, the Australian director of this, who I thought did a phenomenal job, because maybe I have just not been privy to all of the films she's done, but the stuff that I do know that she has done is nowhere near any of this. It is big budget action stuff. She does really cool, classy indie stuff for the most part. Yeah, that sort of more low budget Australian film, critically acclaimed, no doubt, but still nothing on this scale. And I don't know how you train for something like this. I don't know how you step into this world. She has, as far as I know, hasn't built to this. She's just come in, and more than anything, that was my big takeaway. There's some great shots, great reveals, some great little bits. Like when the girls were kind of first meeting at the safe house, and they're sort of, you know, facing off with the guns at each other, and Yelena's going backwards, and she just does that little stumble, and Nat says, "Oh, watch your step!" Like just that, all that little interplay with them was really beautifully done, and some of the sequences and shots that were in there as well. That takes a director who knows what the fuck they are doing was just superb, and so I take my hat off to her for sure. Aussie Prime.
Well, that was all the stuff that I really enjoyed, was all the smaller stuff and all of the, you know, the more kind of, I guess, more indie sensibility aspect. Yeah,
do you like my vest? It's a cool vest, isn't it? Like my vest, got lots of pockets. Do you like my vest?
Yeah.
Well, the hair flip, like that moment, like just to deconstruct the whole superhero ridiculousness of you know, when Yelena says to Nat, hey, why do you do this thing? Like when you're fighting, right? When you put your leg out like this and then you flick your hair, like you're a poser, aren't you? What's all that about? That idea. Yeah. It's the same thing Deadpool did with the whole, why do we always land on our knees? It's really quite painful. Right. It was just that's the sort of stuff that I didn't mind. It made me laugh, and it was those little moments of levity that worked throughout the film for me between the sisters.
Yeah. My issues with the movie is that it's the cookie cutter aspect that's added to these films, which is, oh, we're going to end with a CGI ending. And it's...
Yeah.
It's just a bummer. Like, it always gets back to me. I know this is when Fox was in charge, but it's the same when you go back and watch The Wolverine, which I reckon is a 90% great film. But then they have him fight a CGI Silver Samurai, when it's like, you've got 100 ninjas there. Let him fight 100 ninjas, yes, and choreograph, yes, it and make it like Kill Bill, or make it like a Hong Kong kind of film.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
And give us that for 20 minutes. And that's what I would have liked with all of those Black Widows. I would have, because I loved all of the ideas with it, and I loved all of the storytelling, but I just... Give us all of those women having to, you know, give us a longer fight with that. Have the family have to team up against them, you know, flying around while something falls apart and crashes to the ground, where, you know, they're all going to get to the ground fine. It's just a little bit, you get a bit more, just get to that bit. Just get to the end when, yes, they're on the ground. And yeah, and that's frustrating, because you have set up everything else. I don't think that's Kate Shortland. I think that is what, you know, Marvel creates movies the way they used to create comic books. You know, they've got a factory that's putting all of these things together, and then they bring people in to sort out what they need done. But it just felt like a missed opportunity for me.
Yeah. Like, I still liked some of the other stunt stuff, like you say, when they were sort of escaping the safe house and there was the other Black Widow agent who's jumped on the chimney with them.
Yes.
And gone to grab her hand. And look, just anyone who's listening to this, if you're like a brainwashed secret agent and you're trying to catch two other formerly brainwashed secret agents, and you jump on a chimney and that chimney starts to fall off a building, if someone offers to take your hand, just accept the offer. You can continue, yeah, fighting later on when you get to safety on the, yeah, other side, but just accept the offer. Don't try to stab them. Don't try to pull out of it, because you're going to fall down and then you're going to have to be killed by your master controller through a wristband. That's just the outcome, guys. Just take their hand, just say yes and accept the help, and then you can go back to trying to kill each other. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that sort of sequence was great. I really, it probably wasn't to everyone's taste, but the APC sort of running through the streets there with the car chase with the girls, that I enjoyed, is just watch this thing just sort of destroying everybody. But then to, yeah, your point, when it's like, now we're going to blow up the car and it's going to backflip on top of it, that's when I went, oh, again, we've kind of gone from a cool Bourne Identity type thing, James Bond kind of thing, you know, on the that sort of chase on the motorcycles type of idea, to then go, now we're just blowing up cars in a ridiculous way, and the only line beforehand is put your seatbelt on because this is going to get bumpy, is like, that sometimes can be, again, take me out of what was otherwise a really great sequence. Yeah. It's just watching this armored car just plow through a street of vehicles.
Is it just cheaper these days to make things CGI, or is it too expensive with insurances to get crazy-ass stuntmen who are actually riding motorbikes against traffic and, you know, compared to the way they used to make movies?
I mean, CGI is never cheap, but in some, yeah, respects it's maybe easier to, you know, from a safety point of view, to go, well, we can just make something explode with a computer than it is to actually have one. There were two explosions at the end. Both the girls had that classic, you're walking in shot and there's an explosion behind you and you just keep walking steadily. The one with Yelena was, it felt like it was real, because the actress Florence Pugh did a little bit of like a, there was a little blink in slow-mo. So like, yeah, they obviously went, and like the director's gone, and cue explosion, and you can see, yeah, her blink right as the explosion's about to happen. So the sounds hit and then we get it. But then there was one behind Scarlett Johansson like mere seconds later. Hers looked like it was CGI. So how you make that choice based on is probably a safety issue, I guess, more than anything, depending on what you're after.
So the Garth Jones, who does the Pass the Ammo segment on this podcast, we've been going through the Mad Max movie. So I just recently rewatched Fury Road. And guess what that is? Thrilling at every given moment. And there's people on sticks and they're flying around. And, you know, there's a big CGI moment in that with the sandstorm. But everything else is so grounded that by the time you get to the sandstorm, you accept it because you've seen that it's a world with weight. And I kind of wish they'd done that.
I had that with J.J. Abrams and when he came back to do The Force Awakens. And the creatures were – so they're people in suits, like a lot of the alien characters were people in suits. Or, you know, when Rey's going to get some drinking water and there's this big hulking creature that's sort of lapping out of it like a giant cow or a horse type of thing. It's just this watering hole, this creature. And it, you can see it's actually a big either animatronic or two guys in a suit character that I – get more out of than any of the early prequel stuff that was all 100% CGI because you can tell when someone's or something is really there. And I like any filmmaker who goes back to that somewhat old school way of doing it with practical effects rather than digital.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to Limo this morning and I don't normally bring this up, but fuck it. I'm going to ruin this for everyone. Something that we both agree on that drives us nuts is, you know, when people in TV shows or movies get a coffee and they're quite clearly holding a cup that doesn't have
empty
anything
cup.
In it?
Empty cup. And
put some water in the
just
cup.
Get a coffee. I've got a tray of coffees here. I've got a tray. Unless every single person has a double espresso in many coffee places, as I would know, especially in a pandemic when you're not allowed to take keep cups anymore, they just give you a double espresso, but they put it in a massive cup. Then I would buy it. But the amount who's taken a coffee order any time in the last 5 to 10 years where it used to just be, do you want a black one or do you want a white one? And now it's all, I'll have a half-strength double shot oat milk latte with soy and I'll have a decaf traditional double macchiato without the sprinkles, whatever it might be. Like you just can't. Never, you don't take coffee orders anymore. You never offer to because people will probably then say, yes, I'll take you up on that. And that's the rest of your day gone. But you never, ever, ever end up with just four simple coffees in a tray. It's going to be different sizes, different shapes, different weights. And I'm the same as you. Just why don't just at least put water in there or something just to give it some weight? Because it just, that's one of those things that I just can't stand either. Just drives me bonkers.
It takes me out of things all the time. Just tape a couple of coins to the bottom so it just has a bit of weight. So when you put it down. Anyway, who was the standout in this movie for you? Was there anyone in particular that you enjoyed more than anyone else? Or
well, I thought the Yelena character was fantastic. Again, Florence Pugh, who I saw in the Fighting With My Family movie, which wasn't particularly great about this young girl and her dreams to become a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
She was very good in that. And in this, I thought she was fantastic. And I loved the interplay between the two of them. One of my other issues I've often had with mostly Marvel films are notorious for it, where a character is in deep peril. They're sort of in a high stakes scene trying to take out a villain, and everyone's got quips. There's always quips, you know. Mm-hmm. Like when Civil War, everyone's suddenly attacking each other. All these friends, they're at the airport. And it's that final line of, okay, we need you to come in. You got to come in. And Cap's like, we're not. We're going to stop these guys, and we're not coming in. We're not signing the accords. We've basically gone rogue. And then it's like, okay, well now we got to go at it. And this big fight breaks out, and nobody's pulling punches on each other. And there's the scene where a moment with Hawkeye and Black Widow where they're going at it, and then they pause for a second. And then I think it's Black Widow says, oh, we're still going to be friends though after this, right? And it's like, well, hang on, no. There is emotional stakes here. It's like we have to attack our own friends, and to do that, we have to fight at almost full force because we're all pretty strong and fairly superpowered. And there's a lot of that. I really adore all the Tony Stark one-liners that he has in between other scenes when there's a moment of levity. But in the high stakes moments, I don't think he'd be cracking gags left, right, and center. And there was a lot of it in Falcon and the Winter Soldier as well. And it's like, I get the buddy banter, but not when like you're in a literal life and death situation. So I liked that in this movie, it did happen in those lighter moments. There wasn't like, or it was to a character too, like the Yelena character doing a lot of like, this will be a cool way to die and things like that. So it was more to herself because that felt okay. And any of the little stuff that they had about, you know, making fun of their outfits or their poses or all of that, again, that really lovely sort of sisterly bond for characters that weren't blood related. That was my big takeaway, that Yelena character, the idea that you get to the end of this and you say, yeah, I want to see another movie with her in it. I think she's headed to the Hawkeye series that they're doing. And I'm cool with that. And I hope at some point we see a spin-off where, as we pass on the mantles of our favorite Marvel heroes, she becomes the next Black Widow. I would watch that. I thought her character made me laugh a lot, but at the same time, she could play serious when we needed her to play serious.
I agree. Yeah, I thought she was fantastic. Just getting back to that Hawkeye Black Widow moment in Civil War, I just felt like that scene would have been perfect if, you know, you say that moment, you know, hey, we're still going to be friends after this, blah, blah, blah. How about you then follow it up logically with, why are we fighting? And it's like, this is a really good point. Surely we can come up with a better solution. Should we, you know, let's go over here. And then they go off conspire.
You say that before you start fighting. Are we going to do this? Okay, we're still going to be friends after this? Yeah, okay, depends how hard you hit me. Well, I'm going to hit you hard. All right, then. And then off you go. But it was like, especially because she was like, you know, he's trying to strike her and she's doing that thing of sort of rolling out of the way on the ground. And it was between rolls where she's rolled back, stopped and looked at him. And then, you know, in a moment that she had to take a breath, it's like, were you sitting on that line the whole time? So there's a lot of that that sort of comes into it. Well, so when did you think of that? When did you think that's the time you choose to deliver it? So there's a lot of that in those moments as well when they come up. But, I love that, the depth of the characters really worked for me. The family dynamic part of it was, something I feel we've kind of seen before. And like you said, well, we kind of have seen that, you know, that Nat does sort of have a family of sorts waiting for her somewhere else. So that's not like it was, I wasn't so invested in whether they ended up together or not by the end of this, but I did enjoy those moments that they had. I do want to make mention of the Dracov character, Ray Winston's character.
Oh yeah.
Who I wasn't really sold on, to be honest, until his big moment at the end. I don't know if it was from direction or whether it was just his call, but geez, Ray, who just loves being Ray Winston sometimes, I think, just enjoyed coming in real close to it, like every single person that he was talking to. And because, you know, we've got a lot of strong female characters in this film, I'm sure intentionally, that's probably part of his character trying to push his dominance and assert himself to them, but he's just coming into their personal space and getting right in there. And with Rachel Weisz, when he thought it was her character, and then again later on when it turned out to be Nat, but the fact that he describes, oh, I got all these girls off the street, all this, and describes them as trash, and I do what all people would do with trash, which is recycle them, and just the way he would use terms like that, And I think the other phrase he used was, I used the one resource the world has too much of, girls. And the fact that refers to them as girls. It was just such an incredibly unlikable character and really disturbing, the whole idea of, you know, this Red Room idea that he had set up. He was one of the you know, most intimidating and despicable villains we've seen, because it actually was quite grounded in reality more than, you know, an Ultron or something like that.
I wish we'd had more of him in other movies, to be honest. It felt like you've done a really good job of setting up this awful character, and it feels like gone too soon. Like, I thought he wasn't really impressive in those scenes. He really was, you know, it's like, is he playing Ray Winston or is he playing Harvey Weinstein? Like, it's just such even kind of looks like him, like in a physical mold, not like physically exactly like him, but in that mold. I thought David Harbour and Rachel Weisz were great as well. I think they're it's fun.
It was great. I mean, he had some of the lines when he was talking about you know, why he got thrown in prison. He's like, I don't know, maybe because I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And he mentioned something about, I mentioned something about not liking his hair and little things like that. But you go, I wonder if that was in the script or not, or whether he's just kind of thrown it in. There's a lot of the stuff that he does. I'm sure a lot of people, you know his work, mainly from Stranger Things. But, I just really enjoyed his portrayal of the character. Was it the best introduction for people into Red Guardian? Probably not, but but that's okay by me. I liked, again, we've seen it before in The Incredibles, but him trying to fit into the old suit and stuff like that was, I was a little disappointed. I thought it was going to be, again, another sort of retro looking suit like we've had on the recent classic Loki and stuff. The fact that it came out exactly like one of the sort of modern Captain America looking ones, I was borderline disappointed with. I wouldn't have minded it looking a little bit daggy, and then later on, because it doesn't fit, he gets the upgrade. I really enjoyed his portrayal, and I think the chemistry between those four main protagonists that we had was really, really great. I bought this idea that okay, we don't get along, we're not real family, but by the end of it, we've got as close as you can get to that.
Yeah, Rachel Weisz has always been such a good actor as well. You know, at the start, I was thinking, oh, they've done a pretty good job with the de-aging stuff for this earlier time slot. And then she turned up and I was like, I don't know if they de-aged her. She still looks great.
Yeah, I agree, you know. And
I'd like to see more of her.
Yeah. I just hope she got back to help the pigs, because if the battery runs out on that iPad, little Alexei's going to stop breathing.
That poor pig.
That was one of the most disturbing parts of the whole film, is watching an animatronic pig hold its breath.
Mate, I agree totally. I understood why Natasha was like, when Natasha was like, what are you doing? I'm trying to make a point.
I was hypocritically eating a plate of bacon and sausages, and I'm still going, just please take care of that pig.
Yeah. I like the little twist with Weisz and Natasha, you know, swapping places. I thought that was pretty cool. I did not initially see that coming at all.
No, and again, that idea of her sort of turning tables, I bought into that of like, okay, so Mum hadn't defected fully yet.
Yeah.
And then you realise, oh, no, it was a double cross, a quadruple cross, or a single cross, because you've gone back over the first cross and then you're back on the same side. I'm not quite sure how it works. But that idea of, no, we'll make it look like it and we've just got this disguise. I thought that was a really nice reveal. I didn't see it, hadn't picked it. So that worked for me very much so.
It felt like a real Doctor Who moment when the door opened and David Harbour said, how did you do that? And it felt like the 50th anniversary of when the three doctors are trying to work out how to open the door.
That's right. There was a lot of Ray Winston's office at the end there, Dracov's office, when they came in. I was like, looks like they've maybe recycled the TVA set from from the Loki series. There's a lot of like, okay, we kind of aesthetically, I guess it's that sort of, you know, a lot of this just brass and mahogany stuff going on. But I was like, well, I'm getting a lot of strong vibes of, oh, if we maybe repurpose this set, no one will notice. Now, I think we should talk about the Taskmaster character and how you felt about this portrayal of, for what people, well, for people who don't know, I guess the character is in the comic book Legends does actually have a skull for a face. And kind of has a bit of, it's always reminded me somewhat of a Skeletor sort of character from the Masters of the Universe.
And can
actually, like, his superpower is, he can mimic fighting styles. So this sort of felt like it was borrowing from that a little bit, but then kind of just making the helmet the face rather than the actual face. And then obviously the reveal of who was inside that suit at the end. I enjoyed it because I'm not necessarily a purist when it comes to Marvel comics. I know some stuff, but I'm not enough of the deep cut stuff for me to be fully invested in a character like that to have a strong opinion on it. I liked what it was for the film, though.
Yeah, I don't mind it when they reimagine things. In the comics, he's a mercenary and he trains goons on how to fight. So I remember the first Avengers comic that he turned up in. I think he might have even been designed by George Perez. One of the things that was a downer about him was that I saw Olga Kurylenko's name go up in the credits, and when she hadn't turned up after half an hour, I was like, I bet she's Taskmaster. And then as soon as I worked out that she's Taskmaster, I was like, I bet the daughter didn't die. And then so when that happened, I'm not saying I would have done that normally, but because I know the actress and she's, you know, she's got profile, like she's not a new actor. When I saw her name go up and I didn't know she was in the movie at all and we're not seeing behind that mask, I was like, is this going to be Olga Kurylenko? And so I was a bit bummed out about that.
I wasn't necessarily sold on the idea of that the only reason she was fighting with such a fury was because of, you know, she needed the antidote sprayed in her face.
Yeah.
I was like, she would still, well, maybe she wasn't across the fact that it was the Natalia character that was responsible for the explosion at Natasha, sorry, I should say, who was responsible for exploding Dad's office.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was like, no, when Nat's sitting there going, okay, I'm gonna let you out of this room, and I know you're gonna come swinging, and that's cool, I get it, but I know the real you is in there somewhere, and we're gonna bring her out. I'm thinking that real her was just a small girl. And then you blew up a building that she was in that has made her horribly scarred. So I don't know that just looking for quote unquote the good in someone is going to work in this situation. And maybe the person to do that is not you, who maybe was responsible for it.
That was a misstep for me as well. Like amongst all that CGI, it was like, no. I would have much preferred it if she'd broken that spray in her face and it didn't make any difference. Because
I didn't think that's where it was headed, because I didn't realize that she'd had any of that effect on her as well. I thought, she's just had a really fucking rough go of it, and her life has been pain and torture. Look, when we first were introduced to the character on the bridge, when she's gone to take out the Natasha and the Jeep. Yeah. I thought that was great. That fight sequence was just impressive. Some of the moves that they had, Hurricane Runners on Hurricane Runners, reversals on reversals. That was a great piece. It was again that thing of like when Nat got the box of mail and she's like, oh, I'm probably just going to toss it out. I don't know. And there's this very conspicuous, not in a post pack box that I was like, you don't want to look in that one? And I don't know about you, but if I open the letterbox and there's something other than, like, if there's anything that's not in an envelope, as in it's in like a package, I get so excited. All of her mail was packages. And I'm sure she lives in a highly suspect world of, look, any of these could be a bomb or a tracking device and I need to be very careful. But they all look really good. It's like, I don't know, it could be something from eBay that actually accidentally ended up at your house by mistake. Or, you know, did you not order something off Etsy? It could be a cute little fluffy knitted jumper or something. But in the meantime, it's like, that's a really important box there that you might just want to have a tiny look at. And when the Taskmaster character, she tweaked, you're not after me, you're after something else. I thought maybe it was a bit of a leap to go, and I know exactly which box it is. It's over there. Maybe because the character had already looked into it and, in there and knew what was in there, and we didn't see that is a possible suggestion. But, that was otherwise a really great introduction to the Taskmaster character, that really impressive fight scene. And a great suit. The suit looked really cool too.
Yeah, and seeing all the moves that are like Caps and Winter Soldiers, etc.
Yeah.
Actually, her first appearance did feel in a good way reminiscent of when the Winter Soldier turned up in movie. And I really like the idea of it, etc. But also finding the good in the Taskmaster and then, you know, having her come to, I just kind of feel like it lets Natasha off the heinous crime of blowing up a young girl. And it's like one of my favorite, you know, this is where I say, getting back to the Bourne movies, you know, Bourne Supremacy finishes with him just letting that poor girl know what happened to her father. And that's all he can do to make up for his heinous crime. And there's a part of me that's like, did we need to know what happened in Budapest? Like, maybe if we're going to set up something
Budapest?
No, I think it's Budapest.
No, Budapest.
No, I think it's Budapest. But but it's such a, you've given her such a heinous crime to just have her say, no, I reckon you're all right. Let's stop fighting. Just kind of gives Natasha a free ride that she doesn't deserve.
And she herself has talked about in the past, I think it was with Loki once, where she was talking about the amount of red that she has in her ledger of all these things that she's done. It's, again, important to remember not where the characters are for where we know they end up and what we like about them, but where they came from.
Yeah.
You know, that first time she steps into a ring with Happy, you know, takes him out and Tony Stark, his jaw drops to the floor. And again, this is the problem you have, and we've talked about it with the Loki series. This is the problem you have when you want to go backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
Because a character and their story arc move forward. If you want to go back, you got to be careful where you go, because some of these characters maybe were not likable initially and now they are. And if you try to go backwards, you kind of have to go back to maybe when they weren't as likable or when their history hadn't been forgiven yet, or they hadn't even forgiven themselves yet. And so that's something you have to be careful of. But yeah, I think there was a possibly better way to resolve that than the simple big red button of, hey, let's just spray them with this magic sparkly dust that just helps, that brings everybody out of their evil stupor.
I reckon just have Black Widow still under control with her dad and something went wrong, so it's still the father's fault. And, you know, anyway. But look, one of the things I did like is the idea of all the Black Widow girls running around the world, and it felt a little bit like the ending of the TV series of Buffy. And I think I'd be quite up for a series that follows all of these girls becoming some sort of fighting team, or who knows what you could do with it. But it feels like
a good idea. Could cast it. Yeah, that's a great idea, because you could cast it. You get a sort of strong core of, you know, five at the most, maybe, who are then episode by episode going around the world to hunt down, find, track and stop, and then convert another sort of rogue Black Widow character.
Yeah.
episode by episode in different locations around the world would be a really, really cool show that I would very happily watch. So I hope that's something that we don't just quickly sort of sweep under the rug as, it's resolved off camera, because there's a lot to still be had with that. I don't think it's been completely wrung dry, that idea.
No, I think it's a great idea. I really like that part of it.
I want to just give a little quick shout out while we're talking about, fighting with the Black Widow characters. When the Yelena character, I think it was it Osaka, her first friend, when she first came in and we first got a wind of this antidote that her friend had in the box running down the street, did a cool little Game of Thrones, a big shout out to any Game of Thrones fans, the Arya Stark drop the knife from one hand into the next hand to stab the person.
Yes.
It was a nice little, I don't know if it was an intentional nod to the Game of Thrones moment, very classic moment, not today, but or whether it's just, hey, that's a cool move that everybody apparently does now. But that was one of those things that I really, really liked.
Felt like there was lots of good kind of shout outs, so I wouldn't be surprised if they deliberately dropped that in, because that was actually the best thing that happened in the final series.
Yeah, and look, I don't know if this was a shout-out or not, but I personally want to make mention to anyone listening to this who does have the name Fanny Longbottom, because there was a lot of shade thrown your way in this movie. A lot of mockery, if you will. It's a very perfectly fine British name.
Yep.
And if your name is Fanny Longbottom and you are listening to this, we are on your side.
We are completely on your side. I don't find any of that
Absolutely.
Funny.
That is a great day.
I felt sorry for all the long bottoms.
If I could ever change my name again, I would go back and do that. It would be funny.
What did you think of the after credits scene? Does this pump you up for Hawkeye?
Yeah. Look, I haven't quite we talked about this at the time. I haven't quite connected with the Julia Louis-Dreyfus character just yet.
Yeah.
So when she was revealed as there, I was like, oh, okay. Oh, that's right. You're loitering. But yeah, certainly I knew that the Yelena character was going to be part of the Hawkeye series, but I just assumed that they would be alongside. So now the idea that, and it's not a lie, guess who killed your sister?
Yeah.
Technically speaking.
Yeah.
Holds up, and that's going to be a tough thing for him to be able to hand wave in the early stages, and he probably feels a ton of guilt for it as well. So the idea that that's going to be part of that storyline moving forward really works for me.
Yeah. So in our Loki episode for episode 5, I told you that I had a theory. And I couldn't talk about it because I didn't want to ruin Black Widow in our Loki chat, because there's only some people who are listening to that because I haven't seen the Black Widow movie yet. So here's the theory. So in all the new Marvel series in recent times, we've seen a new good and bad version of Captain America created. In Black Widow, we have a new anti-heroine version of Black Widow in Yelena. We have an all-white, emotionless version of the Vision. We have a female Loki who has similar abilities to Wanda. In the upcoming Hawkeye, we have a new female Archer being introduced in Kate Bishop, who's played by Hayley Stanfield. We've also seen the Hulk analogue, the Abomination, in the Shang-Chi trailer. We have a reflection of Nick Fury in Julia Louis-Dreyfus's Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. So my question is, are we heading towards a Dark Avengers / Masters of Evil team to combat the next iteration of the Avengers?
Wow. Sorry, give me that again.
What was the middle
bit? I had not thought of that. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's, again, one of those things that Marvel does supremely well is the long con. It was our plan the whole time, and this is something that it was seeded a long, long time ago with the idea of, even at the very least, if we want to go there, if we want to pull that trigger, we can.
Yeah.
That's something I had not thought of. We're building up, because I was always moving towards the, well, at some point we move forward with the characters and we've just got, as has happened in comic books since almost forever, that if you go looking up at any point, you know, a new character comes into a film or a television show and you're not across who they are, if you go to Google them, sometimes that can be a deeper rabbit hole than you were ever going to be prepared for, because they have long and storied histories over who has played this version of that character in what timeline. The mantle can get handed on to one person or another. And so when we have seen things like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the idea that, well, we've got a new person now in the holding the mantle of Captain America, same thing could possibly be happening in Loki. This idea that, okay, that's where all of this could possibly be heading is, well, at some point we have to move our original actors on. Someone else can have the title of Black Widow. We just need to show everybody how we make that handover happen. I hadn't actually thought of it the way you're putting it, of, well, some of those are still there. So in the meantime, there could be an interim period where you've got one side versus another that,
So imagine you
very
have,
exciting.
So imagine you have, you know, Sam, Captain America, Bucky, super smart Hulk, who is also injured from using the Infinity Gauntlet, Captain Marvel, Shang-Chi. We've got Kate Bishop as the new Hawkeye. So you've got them as your kind of, and maybe you have Doctor Strange as your new Avengers team. Oh, and you bring back Thor. You can maybe still, or you probably have the female Thor now, right?
Yeah.
So you have the Natalie Portman.
There's another one, Natalie Portman. Yeah, of course.
And then suddenly they're going up against Yelena, Black Widow, USA agent, Sylvie as Loki, Abomination. You've got Contessa as the Nick Fury type, and suddenly you've got, you know, a classic kind of up against one another kind of thing.
That's great. And does that, which we've sort of been wondering how it can happen, where a lot of these are crossing over now between characters that are only have an awareness in the TV world. And, you know, we talk about shows like WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki, and we use the term MCU, but the C part of MCU is cinematic. And in many respects, you could make the argument, well, that's not what this is. I know we're living in a very blurred world where some of these things aren't coming out in cinemas anymore, but if everything being as it should be, they would. And in some places, Black Widow is something you can walk into a cinema and watch, and then you go home and you watch Loki on TV, and that's where they exist. So at some point, there will be, you would think, the tide is going to go both ways. So everything won't just feed into offshoot TV series. So at some point, something that's happened in one of these television shows is going to poke its head up in the movies, whether they're, again, still on streamers or not, but that will happen. And this idea could be a really cool way of doing it, because it's blending both of those worlds, which is all under the one big banner, I suppose, but does that really nicely.
Well, you know, listening to some pundits in America.
Damn, your move, DC. Shit.
Yeah. This is really ups the ante. But listening to pundits in America where they're saying, you know, now the idea of Disney getting a subscription out of someone is more important than getting them to go and see one movie or two movies in a year, because you get 12 months of payment rather than two movie tickets. If you get the blend right, that you still release the movies at the cinema, but then you have to watch these new Marvel series that Kevin Feige is talking about. Once upon a time, we, as you said, there's no way you would have put something important in a TV series and forced people to watch it. But now I think it's the opposite. I think they are trying to funnel people there to get that subscription up, which also makes their stock go up, which then means that you then go and see the movie to see how it plays out, to go, hang on a sec, who was that character? Oh, I'll go and get that Disney subscription to watch that whole Loki series. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but The tipping point was always going to come where, yeah, what's more important? Because initially the idea of someone paying a one-off to watch in their home, as opposed to going to buy a movie ticket, where if you're watching it at home, you could have five mates watching it and you've only paid one price of $25 or whatever, plus subscription costs. But still, it's cheaper than all of you going to the movies. So the idea that, you know, and not let's take what the cinema chains make out of it, we'll put that aside. But as far as a box office goes for what a studio gets, I always thought, well, you know, in the early stages of Quite Clearly, you're not going to make the same money back from a download. And a lot of the early tests of some of these things, like the Trolls movie that came out last year, didn't, from a business standpoint, wasn't sort of seen as a huge success. And there's a lot of similar films, especially those that were only able to be released on a streaming service in the States, that were seen as not being successful because a big budget movie didn't make its money back because, you know, one person paying for it is enough to maybe have five or six instead of, and if you want to watch it again, you just hit play again on it. If you walk out of the cinema and you want to go back and do the afternoon session of Black Widow, you got to go and buy another ticket and you got to take your friends with you again. But now you're right. I think in the last 12 months, it's been such a seismic shift that now it would be something to go, well, if we get a subscription off you, it's going to be for 12 months because you have to come in early. And you have to be all in for the 12 months. You might have only gone to see maybe one of our films, but now we've got a regular payment from you for the year that is about $100, which kind of is going to add up long term. Plus, every time we put one of these premium movies on there, you're going to pay for it. Plus, if we're Marvel Disney, we don't have to pay the cinemas, which is what used to happen. They had to pay the cinemas a cut to be in there. That's how the cinemas make their money as well. They don't just sell popcorn and drinks. They get money from the film studios for putting their movies out there. So now maybe the business model, and if you're Disney and you got so much in the bank that you can, as far as creative cachet goes, that you can go, yeah, because we've called it for the next 4 years. By the way, don't forget, on this streaming service, we also have Star Wars. We also have Disney. We also have Pixar. So it would make sense for them to be the first to cut ties with the cinemas. And that's massive. That's really seismic.
I would have gladly not watched this until I could go to the cinema again, but I just knew that there was no way I wasn't going to have things ruined online beforehand.
Yeah, and look, there's something to be said for, like, we both sort of had the same thing of saying, oh, hey, let's get a review out for this as soon as we can. And I had the same thought as you. Like, I was out and still thought I can get home and whack this on, because guess what?
Yeah.
The session times at my house are all the time. So I just watch it whenever I can. And if I want to start watching it 10 o'clock at night and it finishes sometime after midnight, well then great, cool, no problem, can do. So it is that convenience too that has you going, yeah, I can watch it now, and same as you, then nothing gets spoilt for me and I've watched it as soon as I can. Otherwise, you know, it might be a little while longer than that before I can get to the cinemas, though I think this one on a big screen would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I think so too. Just to finish up, a couple of quick little things. Natasha watching Moonraker was cute. Just kind of letting you know this is a James Bond movie.
And especially, she knows the words. She knows it all by heart.
Yeah. That's what I mean. They're the things that I really enjoyed about the film and would have loved to have had a little bit more time with. And a little bit more of the John Wick kind of action.
But
I loved all of that stuff. The Crimson Dynamo comment is a reference to the armored Russian hero, and the giant that Red Guardian arm wrestles is named after Soviet super soldier Ursa Major, who can turn into a giant grizzly bear, superpowered grizzly bear.
Now he's going to have a bust. He's going to have a busted paw now, isn't he?
That was a pretty funny scene. I enjoyed all of that. There seems to be a little hint for some people having genetic potential for being superheroes. Does that sound like a little soft X gene for the mutants?
We very clearly, this is one of those things that they're just slowly leading everybody who has, you would think most people walking around have a knowledge of the X-Men, but they are really just taking those first baby steps to bring it into the Marvel Universe proper now. It's very clearly there.
Yeah. And my favorite scene was Black Widow breaking her nose. I thought that was super badass, and I thought it was great.
Man. Yeah.
when she just said, oh, that's what I'll do.
I'll sever the nerve. Ow.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that moment. I was like, that's what I want from Black Widow. Yeah. That's great.
Just kick ass.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I mostly enjoyed the film. Wish I'd seen it on the big screen. Everybody, less CGI. It works better. It's just, these endings don't need all of that.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed it more than you. I did. I agree. I would love to have seen it on the big screen. And same as you, there are. I do get CGI fatigue a lot.
Yeah,
with some of these things. But I did enjoy it. There was I can't remember moments where I was willing to, you know, if I could have hit a fast forward button or something like that. So
yeah,
I thought from start to finish, wonderfully done. And very excited to see what happens for the Hawkeye series now. And I did not think I'd be saying that.
No, I know. The things that you say. Well, thank you very much for doing these podcasts back to back. It's been fun digging into it. And you know what? I'm going to turn this off and ask you if Hugh Jackman really is going to return as Logan. I know we can't say it on air, so everyone who's listening, I'm just going to see if I can find something out before you.
Thanks. And remember, I don't get my period, dipshit. I don't have a uterus.
Thank you once again to Ro for helping me out with these two Marvel episodes. He'll be returning to help me cover off the Loki finale later in the week. It's been a little bit of a superhero overload on this podcast of late. So, like, you know, don't get me wrong, I like the genre, but, you know, I need some other things as well. And so we've just still got the next Sofia Coppola podcast, The Beguiled, to get to you. I know I keep saying that I'm going to put it out, but, you know, Ben and I can't catch up and, you know, we can't remote, record podcasts together. So I've just been kind of putting it off. And it's frustrating because we've only got one more Coppola movie to check out. And then we've got a couple of other projects that we're trying to get started. Anyway, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But I'll put that up soon just to help break up all this stuff. We're going to get back into the final season of The Leftovers as well. And just, you know, after the Loki episode, just have a little bit of downtime from the superhero genre, okay? Got to feed the brain with some new stuff. Some of that is a new Pass the Amyl segment with my mate Garth Jones. He's covering the exploitation genre, and we cover the fourth Mad Max movie, Fury Road. So that's a really fun podcast, and that's coming up soon too. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to chat to us, come over to our private Big Squid Facebook page and join up. If you'd like to recommend us to your friends, please do so. I've seen some of you doing that online, and I can't thank you enough. Here's a quote from Rachel Weisz that for some reason this just made me laugh. You know, invariably I'll look for quotes that are kind of inspiring or maybe just outright funny, but this one was just a bit bizarre, and I thought, yeah, you know what, I'm going to go with this. Rachel said, "I have absolutely no empathy for camels. I didn't care for being abused in the Middle East by these horrible, horrible, horrible creatures. They don't like people. It's not at all like the relationship between horses and humans." I don't know why, that just really tickled me. Tough day for camels. Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.